Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Oh, yeah, it is, after all, Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN with you on a Tuesday afternoon, your radio pals for the drive home. David, are you as fascinated by this Jack the Ripper story as I?
I think I'm more fascinated, if that's possible.
Well, when it comes to the world of psychopathic killers, I would find that your interest exceeding mine would be highly unusual.
No. You're fascinated by the whole psychosis of what gets involved when it comes to psychopathic killers. I just find it incredible that things that we've been told. I mean, look, there have been books, bestsellers written on, you know, you claim that. Could you imagine? You take great pride in your family history. You've got this great-grandfather, fought in World War One, Canadian general, all this good stuff. Someone writes a book saying that your great-great-grandfather is a psychopathic murderer.
In my great-grandfather's case, I might believe it.
But I mean, for years, everyone's run around and they thought that this Duke of
Clarence.
Is now the murderer. And it's connected to the royal family. It's connected to this doctor, this guy. Well, now we know it's the demon barber of Fleet Street. This Polish barber, and the idea here is that, you know, you've slandered, you've libeled all of these people throughout the years with zero evidence that this guy had a shifty unibrow, this guy looked weird in a photo, this guy frequented prostitutes, whatever it was.
This guy wore a leather apron.
And now we know that DNA is showing that all of these people that have been, accused of these atrocities were absolutely innocent of these atrocities, and hopefully we can do more. I mean, you look at all of the different things that DNA is doing. I mean, the first thing I want is I want to go to the Tomb of the Unknown in Arlington and get all that DNA that we could possibly get and start to find identities to these people that we haven't known their identities, you know, for over 100 years.
You know, David, that is such an excellent point because the days of the unknown soldier really should be at an end because with DNA, you can take anything and you can get a positive match and figure out what you're dealing with in terms of an identity.
And you know, I'm sure that the families are long gone that knew who these people were in life, but it would be nice to know that, you know, we don't leave anyone behind and we'll still give, recognition where it's due. But again, we know who Jack the Ripper was with quite at least 75% of the murders we can link to DNA now.
Well, this whole story, I mean, I've been interested in this case since, believe it or not, I was in sixth grade and I read a book about it. And don't forget, my first book was about the FBI when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I kid you not, I've always been interested in this kind of stuff. But the thing about Jack the Ripper is that it seemed like such an unsolvable mystery. How do you solve crimes that happened back in the 1880s, given the way evidence disappears, given the way evidence degrades, given the possibility for cross-contamination, but this shawl that was tested for DNA. Now, for those who don't know, Jack the Ripper was the world's first very well-known psychosexual killer, okay? You can trace the lineage of psycho killers all the way back to Jack the Ripper in terms of the publicity Jack the Ripper got. Certainly, there were psychosexual killers throughout history, but Jack the Ripper was like the first mainstream cult, a psychosexual killer. And it just looked as though that case was never, ever going to be solved. But anyway, he killed at least 5 women in London back in the 1880s. And the 5 women that are most referred to are known as the canonical victims of Jack the Ripper. Now, that's a fancy way of saying 5 women are believed by most of the experts to have, in fact, been killed by the exact same person, the canonical victims. There are some other females who died under similar circumstances during that time period, but nobody has been able to positively or conclusively link them to Jack the Ripper. Now, Jack the Ripper, I mean, and here's where it gets really interesting, David, and that is that this DNA testing. Now, I don't know what to make of the idea that somehow the sample of the shawl from one of the crime scenes was cross-contaminated and just happened to have been cross-contaminated with DNA from people connected to this Aaron Kosmowski guy and the victim to whom they traced this shawl, Eddowes.
Yeah, that might be a little OJ defense there to try to link that. You know, I think we're in the billions or trillions of percentile of how, you know, Barry Scheck would even have a hard time with that. And that was, you know, a lot of the argument, well, if there's one in a trillion, you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
You're saying
there's a chance.
But here's the thing. When you look at Jack the Ripper, first of all, this is happening in a Western, you know, London at the time was the world's largest city. You had multiple newspapers. There's always the problem when you publicize an atrocity like the Jack the Ripper killings, that someone's going to try to do it again, or someone's going to. And there were letters that were sent that were trying to be like Jack the Ripper. The copycat phenomenon is not just an internet sensation. These are things that have been happening for years.
Correctamundo.
But the other thing that Jack the Ripper represented was Scotland Yard was the cutting edge of technology at that time. And this was very embarrassing. It was embarrassing to England. It was embarrassing to the Western world that they couldn't find this guy. And Jack the Ripper evoked fear in for almost 30 years after the murder stopped. And the question has to be, why did the murder stop? That was one of the main questions. This killer had to have died or been, you know, arrested on another crime. Well, we find out that there is a reason why the murder stopped, because this Polish barber was put in a sane asylum.
Correct.
So, you know, that checks the box as to why he wasn't able to continue to kill.
Oh, David, you're so right, because so many boxes check off with this Aaron Kosmowski guy. It's a very compelling case they're making, because you're absolutely right. When the killing stopped, it was thought that Jack the Ripper had died, that he had been incarcerated for some other misdeed, had committed suicide because of the atrocity of his last known crime and the last known canonical victim, he'd been locked up,
and many people thought that's why the Duke of Clarence was such a convincing, because you know the royal family got a hold of him, they found out what was going on, but then you had all of these, and this is why the deathbed confession is really something you can't put a lot of weight into, because you would think that at your last moments on this earth, that's really when you become the most honorable, the most noble. Why would you want to leave this earth on a lie? And yet, how many people on their deathbed told the world that they were Jack the Ripper, or put in their diary that they were Jack the Ripper? There's at least three of these people that have told a loved one, guess what? I'm Jack the Ripper. H.H. Holmes, which is a famous...
Chicago. House of Horrors.
And he had, I believe, he was originally... spent some time in Australia. Somehow people tried to connect him to the Jack the Ripper killings. And, you know, but again, who... do these guys really admit it? Do they ever have... if you're truly mentally ill, and back then, going to a mental asylum was a little different than it is today. I mean, they treated those people horribly. I mean, they were looked at. The conditions were bad. There was a way with syphilis and everything else where your brain would deteriorate to the point where you were a violent husk of what you used to be. If this continued to happen over time for this guy. And the other thing is, you know, I've read a lot of stuff online in the last day that talks about, well, why would a barber have any sort of medical knowledge? These other people were doctors and they had some degree. Well, back then, barbers weren't just barbers. You would go to a barber and sometimes you would have a teeth pulled. Sometimes these guys also moonlighted in other professions as well. A barber isn't the guy at Fantastic Sam's or Supercuts. The barber did a lot more. There were dentists that were blacksmiths.
Right. You'd go to a surgeon for a shave.
Exactly. And which is, yeah, no, not to shave a surgical area, but
right,
just a shave. But, you know, when you look at the famous gangs of New York, you know, a butcher, someone who works with meat, you know, necessarily, they have a pretty good idea of the anatomy. They also aren't afraid to cut into different. So everyone focused on the fact that this killer had to be a doctor because they showed a sophistication or had instruments that could do that. But if you really look at London, it could have really been anyone.
And, you know, David, that also presupposes, and I never bought into this, that this guy had medical knowledge. Now, some of the experts at the time said that he had medical knowledge. But in the case of his final victim, for example, given the fact that the final victim was basically ripped wide open, you don't have to be a famous heart surgeon in order to figure out where the heart is and how to carve it out. So that whole thing that he had medical knowledge, I always thought that that was maybe a false flag. And you know, there's so much to this story. We're talking about the fact that Jack the Ripper, one of the most notorious unknown serial killers of all time, he was like the BTK and the Son of Sam all wrapped into one in one individual. They think he's been identified now with DNA evidence from a shawl, which has DNA from one of the Jack the Ripper victims, as well as Aaron Kosmowski, who, I might add, was a longtime suspect in the Jack the Ripper killings. This is not some name that is out of the blue. This is not a name that nobody had heard of before in the Ripperology community.
And the other thing is that the DNA that was found that matches the killer is now been also found on other victims. They weren't even looking for, you know, that DNA strain. So this is something that now has been, and again, they don't have, it's not conclusive with all the victims, but I believe four of the five have shown his DNA, and it's just a matter of not having enough to test on the fifth victim. But again, you're absolutely right when you talk about the fact that, you know, if you find a body and that body had a, you know, a very sophisticated stent put in their heart, you could say, wow, this person really knows what they're doing with a heart. But when it comes to a dissection, now, one of the main arguments was there's a book that I was reading a while back called The Butchering Art. And it talks about the 19th century medicine, how different it was. The fact that a lot of people didn't experiment with cadavers. They were so hard to find. There were people robbing graves. They were actually building little alarm systems to keep people from robbing graves.
Yeah, they were called resurrectionists.
And they were literally taking them to the local medical school just to. So nobody really had a whole lot of experience with bodies. And surgery that involved the head or the chest back then, you didn't even do it. You did it only when you knew the person was going to die, and it was more experimentation for other people around. The conditions were bad. They did not understand bacteria. They didn't understand disease. In fact, if you had something that was contagious, the argument in the 19th century was get them out of the hospital, put them on the streets, because they can get other people sick in the hospital. So go make everyone else contagious right out there. And when you look at the Jack the Ripper at that time, the thought was if you had the courage to be able to dissect the body, you must have had some experience to do so. But no one had ever done this before. This was the first known serial killer. It was the first time someone tried to actually taunt the police with something so heinous.
Well, you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, David, because a couple of points here. Number one, I think that we can now dismiss the From Hell letter as a forgery, as a letter that was not written by Jack the Ripper, because the Dear Hell letter is too well written in the English language. But what a lot of people don't know is near one of the crime scenes, the night of, I believe it was the double murder, near one of the crime scenes, there was a piece of missing clothing from the crime scene. Underneath or on top of the piece of missing clothing from the crime scene, it was written on a wall, "The Jews, J-U-W-E-S, are the men that will not be blamed for nothing." Now, that is exactly the kind of verbiage I would expect from an immigrant whose first language was not English, whose first language was Polish or possibly Yiddish. I would expect that kind of usage of English. The Jews are the people or are the men that will not be suspected. I would expect that from an immigrant. So that piece of information, I think, is important because it was, David, a taunting. My analysis of it is it was a taunting of police because the suspect happens to have been Jewish.
And there were some misspellings in the From Hell letter, if I remember. I think kidney was spelled wrong and some other different things. But
there's a fluidity. You know, there's like almost a Shakespearean fluidity to From Hell letter.
And the other thing that we learned, I think law enforcement learned in the 19th century that we don't do anymore, is they don't put details of the crime scene in the newspaper. And one of the things that they found out about is that if you don't withhold that information, people will, you know, it's the headlines sell and people read what was going on in the investigation and they would repeat it. They would write letters and have details. We saw with the Zodiac killer that they went out of their way to not put all the information out there so that they could find out what is something that someone would only know if they committed these crimes. We're not going to give the police everything. Back then, when there was a crime scene, sometimes journalists would show up, reporters would show up before the police did. So there was no crime scene. You know, they didn't cut it off from anyone. You had folks walking around, taking photos, contaminating the scene. In order for us to believe that this barber somehow got his DNA, you know, at the crime scene or on the victims, there's a whole lot of extrapolating. First of all, his barber shop was on the other side of town. No way would a female go, a prostitute from that section of town would be uncommon for her to go into a barber shop. But if even if he had, you know, was a client of these prostitutes, that type of DNA would not have appeared.
Yeah, the well,
not
the,
to get too graphic.
Well, yeah, the DNA was, shall we say, male fluid. Does Bill Clinton ring a bell?
Well, no, it's not that type of DNA. So what I'm saying is that if he had frequented those you know, ladies of in their profession, it would have been a different type of DNA, and it would have been in a different location. I'm just saying that the clothing that they had, it showed a DNA strand, but it did not show that sort of genetic DNA.
Huh. So some of the reporters apparently did not read the more than the abstract of the study in Forensics Magazine or whatever it's called.
What are they? Are they? They're saying that it's.
I've read that it was
two of the victims. That, I heard that there were two of the victims that said that there was non.
I had read that it was semen.
Okay. Well, two of the victims had non.
Non-semen DNA.
Yeah, non-semen DNA.
This is getting to be like Quincy.
Yeah, it is.
Law and Order, 1888.
There's other things that happen at a crime scene, you know?
Absolutely.
Sweat, blood, the resistance, struggle, skin, you know, all the different things that you get when you're fighting for your life.
Well, we need to break here on News Radio 930 WBEN. David, I just wonder, you know, what other things DNA could possibly clear up. I mean, as you said, the tomb of the unknown soldier. How would you feel? Well, we'll get into this after the break on News Radio 930 WBEN. Bowerly and Bellavia, can you believe they actually say they've identified Jack the Ripper? I never thought that thing was going to get solved. Psycho. 3:36, News Radio 930 WBEN, Bowerly and Bellavia. Can you believe they looks like they've actually solved the Jack the Ripper case with DNA? And the From Hell letter we referenced earlier, that has long been not only the title of a Johnny Depp movie from way back when, but was it Johnny Depp? From Hell? Yeah, I don't think that was a very good movie. I threw out the DVD.
But obviously, they didn't do the research on that movie because that whole thing is just completely garbage at this point.
Oh, terrible. From Hell, Mr. Lusk. Mr. Lusk was one of the citizens who was concerned about what was going on in Whitechapel way back when. From Hell, Mr. Lusk. So, there are some misspellings here, but I'm going to read it as if there are no misspellings. Sir, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman. Preserved it for you. The other piece I fried and ate it. Was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife that took it out if only you wait a while longer. Signed, catch me when you can, Mr. Lusk. And, you know, I read that, and that letter has never struck me as being authentic. You know what that strikes me as being? It strikes me as being a letter that was written by somebody who is privy to inside information, like, I don't know, maybe a newspaper person to sell more newspapers.
Well, listen, here's the other thing, too. There was a lot of pressure on law enforcement to find this guy. And the idea that there was no contact made whatsoever, would probably put a lot of pressure on any police department to at least come up with something. You know, your bosses are clamoring. The people want to know. The royal family wanted to know. Please tell us you're close to finding this guy so that the public can get back to normal. You know, who's to say the police didn't do that?
Good point.
You know?
Good point. And actually, it's funny because they tried so many innovative techniques back during the Jack the Ripper spree. They actually used canine dogs. They used bloodhounds. I mean, they didn't usually have a canine unit with the police in London, but they brought in the dogs on one case. Unfortunately, the dogs lost the scent. I would never see that on live PD. And also, they had male detectives dressing up as females and trying to look like ladies of the evening in an attempt to lure Jack the Ripper.
Well, some police departments still do that, but...
Yes, they do.
That's acceptable now.
Yes, they do, but it was... In the 1880s, it was really innovative.
No, the other thing is that it's one of the things that really was alarming to law enforcement was how this guy got away with it, because... You know, how just because something happens in 1880 doesn't mean that everyone was backwards to the point where they didn't know what roadblocks were. They didn't know what sections were. They had people in wait, cordoning areas off, making sure someone couldn't get away. Even when you look at John Wilkes Booth, when he assassinated Lincoln, those roadblocks and checks were already out there. There was a sophistication in security back then, especially when you consider that Robert E. Lee surrendered at Appomattox. The rest of the Confederate Army did not. Jefferson Davis was still president of the Confederacy. They were ready for anything. So when Booth was able to go across the river, they had people in checkpoints saying, hey, we just saw a guy go across, and you know, security apparatuses were still in.
Well, Booth was an actor, and he was able to talk his way across the bridge, even though he shouldn't have been able to cross at that particular time.
And he had a reputation, too, of... the relationships that he had all around Washington. But again, whether or not, when it comes to DNA, what's out there that we need to know? I mean, Kennedy's not going to be determined by DNA.
Nope.
The Lindbergh baby, you might get something out of that with DNA.
You know, okay, let's talk about that. Charles Lindbergh had a son. There are many theories as to what happened to his son. Some of them aren't very pleasant, by the way. Remember General Schwarzkopf from the first Gulf War? His father was actually in charge of the investigation into the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby. And if you don't know, Charles Lindbergh was a very famous guy back in the 1920s because he was the first guy to fly solo and nonstop across the Atlantic.
And he was one of the things about Schwarzkopf's, you know, kin there is that a lot of the credit for the Lindbergh baby investigation was really put on J. Edgar Hoover. And honestly, that was kind of fake news. All the idea of fingerprints, and he brought all this technology to the FBI. In reality, a lot of people were doing that, and he took a lot of credit and really got a lot of power because of the Lindbergh investigation, and a lot of the really decent police work was done in New Jersey. It wasn't done by the FBI.
Yeah, I mean, some people think that it was an inside job, that somebody within the Lindbergh household, I'll be very polite about this, that somebody in the Lindbergh household set it up. Because under ordinary scheduling, they shouldn't have been there that night.
There's a lot of things that we're learning about Lindbergh that aren't pleasant.
Like rampant anti-Semitism?
Well, the idea that he really wasn't as maybe heroic and patriotic as we once thought he was.
Well, come on. Him and Hermann Göring were very good friends. How could you say such a thing?
Well, listen, whether or not America was involved in a war in 1937 to 39, it was pretty clear that there were some folks in Europe that weren't necessarily had the best of reputation. And to hang out with them and to do public events supporting the Nazi regime was still controversial, even though we weren't at war with Germany.
So that, as far as the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, we're asking you guys, what DNA-based case do you think could be solved by DNA? Would you like to see solved by DNA? You know, everybody loves a whodunit. There's a reason why all these investigation channels are so popular, because everybody wants to know how they caught him, how they caught up with him, how they caught up with her. But there was a guy, he was a German immigrant named Bruno Richard Hauptmann, and he was tried and convicted, and he denied his guilt to the end. The problem with his denying the guilt is that the ladder that was found at the crime scene, the wood from the ladder was a perfect match to the wood in one of the beams in the Hauptmann's property. So that was definitely against him. Also, they weighed Hauptmann, and they added together the weight of the Lindbergh baby when the baby was kidnapped, and they took an identical step, and exactly the weight that would have been between the two of them is the weight at which the ladder was actually broken on one step, which was found out at the crime scene. Oh, yes, and then there's the matter, David, of the ransom money that had been paid to the kidnapper of the Lindbergh baby. The ransom money serial number showed up when Bruno Hauptmann went to get gas. And a very alert gas station clerk saw the bill, wrote down the tag number of the car pulling away, and that was the lead that got the police to Bruno Richard Hauptmann's place. And at his place, they also found a whole bunch of the unused ransom money.
Well, listen, this is all advanced police work, and one of the reasons why so much changed after the Lindbergh kidnapping, and why it was something that people, you know, with newspapers, were following in real time. I mean, the updates were there. When it comes to DNA, I'd like to know who finally killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman.
You have some doubts that it was O.J. Simpson?
No, none at all.
But you just want closure and verification?
It would be nice if we could once and for all have whoever's out there that doesn't believe that O.J. is a murderer. You know, why not just do it again?
I don't see why not. Of course, the first time a jury didn't buy it in the criminal case.
Well, they didn't buy the way that the DNA was gleaned.
Yeah, because there was missing blood.
But, you know, here's the thing about 1995 to today. We have a totally different understanding of DNA evidence. That was still considered to be almost Martian technology. What does this mean? What is DNA? Now we've got people that are leaving death row because of DNA. Now we're finding out. Here's the other thing. There's a lot of people that we have convicted of murders that have been executed that are no longer on this earth that probably killed more people. So whether or not you want to know, it's no mystery that John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy and all these serial killers murdered people. Maybe they killed more people. Maybe, this strangler over here and this Green River killer over there, maybe they're responsible for another, 25 murders, and maybe that'll bring closure to a family.
Possibly. I think closure is a bit overrated, but I think everybody wants to know exactly what happened when a loved one leaves under violent circumstances. But can we just get back to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier?
Yes.
As obviously a very prominent veteran and well-known guy for his service in the United States military, if President Trump were to say, given the advancements in DNA technology, it's time to rethink the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which is a sacred place to us, but it is time to get those remains identified. We have the science now. We have the technology to identify these remains. So we're going to disinter the bodies. We're going to test for DNA, and we're going to run it against all samples to see if we get a match. Would it bother you? Would you believe that the graves were being desecrated?
No.
Or would you regard it as a service to any surviving family members?
No, listen, I mean, there's a whole lot of folks that are in mass burials, and there are mixed DNAs that are in a lot of these containers, especially when it comes to some of the older and older wars that we fought in. There's a very real possibility that we buried people that, you know, we didn't even know there were separate folks in there. So absolutely. I mean, it's not done to desecrate it. If we're doing it, to take a picture of to see what Abraham Lincoln looks like after, we moved his body, that's a little different. But the fact that we're actually trying to take this Tomb of the Unknown and find out this was a person. This was Lieutenant, Joe Smith. And he lived and he died. And for years, we didn't know who he was. Let's give him the respect he deserves, and let's acknowledge the family that they lost someone. I mean, the key here is that it's not a mystery as to who these people were. It's not like people were drafted and we didn't have a record of them. So it's exhausting work. But I mean, we're finding remains. North Korea just sent us a bunch of folks. We had no idea if these were individual, folks, if they had to go through that. It took they're still identifying those guys from that were turned over from the Kim Jong-un regime.
I mean, I presume in order to get a match on the remains from the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, there's got to be a larger database, or would they go to 23andMe and Ancestry.com and those places?
Well, see, this is going to be a whole court thing down the road. I mean, this is far too new, and we're sharing information that we're really not clear we're sharing. It turns out, if my studies are accurate, correct me if I'm wrong, but the best DNA source is a female family member. So they get the female family member that will be a direct link to what your DNA is.
The mitochondrial DNA.
And so with bin Laden, for example, that's what we look at our terrorists on our watch list, the folks that we want to take out with drone strikes, and we find that female member and their family, and we lock that in there, and we send that digital DNA to every one of our hunter-killer units, and it's literally that quick where they're taking any blood, any debris, and they're running it through a database and saying, yes, this is Zarqawi. Yes, this is bin Laden. And they know pretty quickly because they have that already on file.
All right. Is there a DNA mystery that you believe we can actually solve today and should solve today? We got to get into Zodiac Killer. I'm sorry, but Jack the Ripper, a mini obsession of mine. Zodiac Killer, another mini obsession of mine. And if they can solve something from the 1880s, they ought to be able to solve something from the 1960s. So stay with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. So it looks like Jack the Ripper is down. Looks like we actually have the identity of Jack the Ripper, which that is something by which I'm absolutely astonished. So, David, what, like, how many percentage points do you think do you give this report that they've identified Jack the Ripper? You think this is 100%? You think it's 90%?
I mean, here's the thing: the stories go through the tabloids first, and then they're vetted and thought about, and people sit on them. What was different about this was that it actually evoked a response from, you know, authorities in the UK, and that really hasn't happened before. I mean, we've probably seen, you know, how many stories over the years that they found, you know, they found, what was her name? Angela.
Amelia Earhart?
Amelia Earhart. Well, we found her wheel.
They did find Angela Lansbury, too.
They found Angela Lansbury behind another murder, she wrote. But, yeah, no, they've always had these stories that come out that, yeah, we found this, we found that, mystery solved, the moon is made of, you know, brie. And all of a sudden, it turns out that's not the case. This story came out through the tabloids, and then it kind of trickled down through the actual reputable sources, and it got a response from law enforcement. So, again, the test was not conducted by, you know, just a Maury Povich test.
Right.
This was done by authorities, and that information leaked out. So we're awaiting to hear an official confirmation. But, again, I think we're going to see that more of these stories are going to come out. We're going to find out more and more people have done things that they don't really want us to know. And maybe that's definitely a good thing. We want these families at least to have closure. But when you're sharing your information with 23andMe, did you ever think that you would be, you know, setting up your uncle that you haven't seen in a couple months for a double homicide charge? And that might change things. Hey, you're from Sicily, and your uncle's a rapist. You're like, whoa, you know? That's a lot to take.
The report typically doesn't get into that level of detail. But
no, I'm saying that now it's going to be used.
I know.
Again, I mean, you think about, you know, we got the DNA off a piece of silverware. We found out who the UB bike path rapist was. This is a great day in law enforcement. But once the courts start to go through, what is your, you know, personal information? What are your privacy rights? You know, it can get slippery at that point.
Very, very interesting point. And, you know, I brought up the Zodiac Killer, David, before the last break. And this was a guy in California that would taunt police. He would taunt the newspapers. He would write ciphers. Actually, the first cipher letter he wrote was actually deciphered by an amateur after people from CIA and the FBI and the Navy all failed this amateur guy, this crossword puzzle dude, and his wife sat down on a Sunday and actually cracked the Zodiac Killer code. And
isn't that something?
I think it's amazing. But they were really smart about it because they figured, okay, this guy is such a megalomaniac that the first word he's going to use will be I, just the letter I to indicate me, I. And in fact, that's what the code revealed. And it was just a question of basically using deductive logic to figure out which symbols appeared the most and which symbols appear the most in standard English writing, even though the guy intentionally put some misspellings in there. But bottom line is Zodiac Killer what made the Zodiac Killer a horrible force back in the 1960s in California was the fact that he was unknown, and he did threaten to blow up a school bus, to blow it up or shoot it out, or pick off the little kiddies as they jumped off the bus. There was absolute panic in the San Francisco Bay Area. This guy was never caught.
Someone just texted in, the Shroud of Turin would be a cool start to get some sort of confirmation as to whose blood, what that is. I mean, again, if that's a fraud, very sophisticated.
Extremely sophisticated fraud, if in fact it is a fraud.
It was someone who was crucified. It was someone who had very similar markings to what Christ had. But again, I mean, unfortunately, the Romans did that a lot, so it's not like that's the only person crucified in a 50-year time frame.
But you know, they still can't really figure out what happened to create the Shroud of Turin. I know that there are people who claim to have replicated it, but I'm sorry, there's nothing like the Shroud.
And it's such a holy relic now that it's not going to be easy to get permission to cut. Even the section that they tested for years was the replaced section.
Right.
And that's why they had carbon 14 results that were off.
Yeah, the Shroud was damaged in a fire, and it was replaced. The material was replaced, and the material that was replaced turns out to be what they tested,
right,
which gave them the result that it gave them.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.